Good morning. In case of an emergency, we're going to exit through the main doors or closest exit, which are illuminated by an exit sign. We will assemble on the lawn of the building, National Building Museum, across the street. An automatic external defibrillator is available at the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically located throughout the building. Restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. Today's safety contact is to let you know that next month is National Fire Prevention Month. One of the main types of fires, of household fires, are electrical. Some of these fires are caused by electrical system failures, but many more are caused by incorrectly installed wiring or overloaded circuits and extension cords. The following are simple steps you can take to prevent the loss of life and property resulting from electrical fires. I call your attention to the video.
This message brought to you by USFA and your local fire department. Prevent an electrical fire in your home by following these simple steps. Never use extension cords with appliances. Plug them directly into wall outlets. Replace worn or damaged cords immediately. Do not try to repair them. Avoid putting cords where they can be damaged or pinched. Buy only appliances approved by a recognized testing lab. Use light bulbs that match the recommended wattage. Have all electrical work done by a licensed electrician. Learn more at usfa.fema.gov.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Crawford, and thanks at the outset for arranging this meeting so we could have this conversation. This is very important for us to do this. I'm going to have our CEO do most of the speaking, but let me just start with a brief introduction, and that is that experience over the decades of regulated industries has shown that no matter how good the intentions of an operator are, if the operator is running potentially hazardous endeavors, that operator will probably do it better with the help of a regulator. So that's decades of experience has demonstrated that. Decades of experience has also demonstrated that when the regulator and the regulated have a collaborative relationship as opposed to an adversarial relationship, it works much better. And the reason it works well when it's collaborative is because they have their eyes on the same prize. The prize is continuous improvement of safety. So I look forward to doing that with you, and I look forward to having these discussions to pursue that common objective of continuously improving safety. So now in order to do that, we have to get stood up. And so that means we have to get started. First of all, kudos to the three jurisdictions, because we're unusual in this mass transit property to be the only one in the country that responds to three jurisdictions. Virginia, Maryland, and the District of Columbia. So kudos to the three of them for creating the legislative framework that enables us to get started. So we're getting running now, because that's been a huge challenge doing this with three properties. When most of the other properties in the country just respond to one jurisdiction, now we respond to three jurisdictions. That's been a huge challenge. The three jurisdictions stood up to that challenge and created the enabling legislation that generated the opportunity for us to get started. So we are in that startup process, and I'm going to steal a little of David's thunder briefly by saying that we have started one of the first major steps of that process, because we have now filed our application with the Federal Transit Administration to get certified as a state safety oversight organization. So if that was supposed to happen by September 30th, we did it ahead of time and under budget. So what's not to like? So thank you. So congratulations to David and his team for doing that, and I will now turn this over to David to let him give you greater detail on that. So thank you very much for having this meeting.
Thank you so much. Good morning. So if we can go to the next slide, what I wanted to just this slide is sort of a mishmash of all things state safety oversight to try to sort of set the level for what a state safety oversight agency does. In 2012, Congress directed the FTA to establish a comprehensive safety program for rail oversight, and it provided the FTA the authority to do that. And so as a result, the 30 states with rail transit systems are required to establish and administer state safety oversight programs. And the purpose of a state safety oversight program is to regulate and oversee the safety of a rapid transit authority. FTA provides federal funds through the SSO, or State Safety Oversight, grant program for eligible states to develop and carry out these duties. And in 2017, Virginia, Maryland, and the District of Columbia entered into a compact, an agreement between states, which was ratified by Congress to create the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission and stand it up as the State Safety Oversight Agency for WMATA Metro Rail. By federal law, any state safety oversight agency needs to be financially independent from any RTA or rapid transit authority that they oversee, and that extends to financial independence, operational independence, as well as independence of the commissioners and the employees of the organizations. So federal law requires the FTA to certify each state safety oversight program to ensure that each program is in compliance with federal law, and the law establishes April 15th of 2019 as the deadline for each SSO program to be certified by the federal government. So once the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission is certified, once its program is certified, then we will become the state safety oversight agency for Metro Rail. So on the next slide, there's some core functions of what any SSOA, any state safety oversight agency, is required to do. And these are, I think, pretty self-explanatory. We would be required to investigate safety events that occur on the property, to conduct inspections and audits, as well as to administer a program of corrective action plans. There will always be corrective action plans, because the spirit of this oversight is that we are working together toward continual improvement of the safety on the property. And there is also safety certification of major capital projects, as well as general oversight of emergency preparedness and emergency management. So on the next slide, first, a little bit of history. The Tri-State Oversight Commission had been performing safety oversight duties for WMATA until October of 2015, when the Secretary of Transportation directed the FTA to assume direct and temporary oversight of safety at WMATA Metro Rail. So currently, the FTA is conducting day-to-day safety oversight of CAPs, corrective action plans, inspections, and investigations, and through the FTA's leadership, the TOC, or the Tri-State Oversight Committee, handles emergency management, safety certification, and the audit program for Metro Rail. So as the WMSC moves towards certification, the FTA will oversee a transfer of these responsibilities, all six of these core functions, to the WMSC. And once the WMSC, the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission, is certified, once its program is certified, the TOC will cease to exist. It will be dissolved. So on the next slide, I'll start to focus a little bit on the MSC itself. And what I want to talk about really for the balance of my time with you, and I'll try to make it brief, is the appointment of commissioners, a little bit about our organizational structure, the authorities and enforcement powers that the WMSC will have once certified, and then I'll leave you with a few words about what transition looks like for us. So on the next slide, I list the commissioners of the WMSC. You can go on to the next slide, Ryan. Many of whom are with us. Just like the WMATA board, our commissioners are appointed from the jurisdictions that are served by Metro Rail. So from the District of Columbia, we have our commissioners sitting over behind some of you. So from the District of Columbia, we're joined today by Robert Bob, and thank you, Mr. Bob. Chris Hart, of course. Commissioners from Maryland, Deborah Farrar-Dyke, Howard Roberts, and John Contestable. And also from Virginia is Greg Hull and Mark Rosenker. And Barbara Reese serves as an alternate commissioner from Virginia, but she was unable to be with us today. And I didn't mention Chris Geldar, the alternate from the District of Columbia. So these are our commissioners. The first act of business for the WMSC or for the jurisdictions was to appoint these commissioners, seat them, and they began doing business. One of their first either wise or not so wise acts was to hire me to serve as the CEO of the organization, and I've been working since June to hire staff and stand up the MSC. So we've been pursuing sort of a dual model that I've been calling the belt and suspenders approach of directly hiring staff as well as competitively awarding some support contracts to two firms to provide us staffing services. So the screen is showing our organizational chart. We have the positions that are in the green color are positions that we have hired directly as full-time employees, and the staffing positions that are shown in purple are positions or services that will be provided to us under the two contracts that we've been awarded or that we have awarded. So on the next slide, I don't think there's need to go into detail on our organizational structure. On the next slide is a bunch of words that try to describe how the WMSC will conduct its oversight of Metro Rail. Once our program is certified by the FTA, we will have the authority to conduct inspections, investigations, examination, and testing of WMATA personnel and contractors, property, equipment, facilities, rolling stock, and operations of the Metro Rail system to include electronic information and databases. We'll have subpoena power. Doubt we'll have to use that, but that is an authority. We will review, approve, and oversee WMATA safety plans. Right now, WMATA is required to author a system safety program plan, and new FTA regulations are evolving that into a safety management system approach called the Public Transportation Agency Safety Plan. So the MSC will review and approve those plans on an annual basis. We'll also have the authority to take enforcement action include requiring, approving, overseeing corrective action plans, implementing and enforcing federal and state laws, and developing and implementing an ongoing audit program, as well as assessing WMATA's ability to respond to emergencies and its bringing online of major capital programs. On the next slide, and we're getting to the end here, are some enforcement powers that the WMSC will have once its program is certified. Some of the key powers will include compelling WMATA to restrict, suspend, or prohibit rail service on all or part of the system if necessary, to require WMATA's Inspector General to conduct audits and inspections as necessary, to direct WMATA to reprogram spending to ensure that safety-critical items are funded. I've mentioned the corrective action program, and the WMSC will have the authority to suspend or require WMATA to suspend or disqualify an individual from performing safety-sensitive functions, to require WMATA to remove a vehicle, infrastructure, or element from rail service, or to suspend service on all or part of the system. We will also publish an annual safety report with respect to Metro Rail safety and deliver it to the board here as well as the jurisdictions. And I guess the next slide starts to talk a little bit about transition from a essentially in this transition period, Chairman Hart mentioned that we've submitted our application for certification. We are required to be certified by April of next year, and during this interim period of transition, the FTA will be leading an orderly transfer of knowledge and transfer of responsibilities from the FTA and from the TOC, we are ready to enter that transition period. In fact, the next slide is the final slide, and it talks a little bit about where we stand right now. We submitted our application for certification this week, and we look forward to the FTA hosting a transition kickoff meeting in the weeks ahead once they have determined that our application is complete. And we will begin a shadowing process that will include the FTA validating our capacity to carry out our oversight responsibilities. And once that validation is complete, and again, there's no set length for the transition, but the law requires us to be certified by April 15th of 2019. So I guess the bottom line from what I'd like you to take away is that we've submitted our application for certification. We've resourced the agency both through staffing contracts and direct hires, and we are fully prepared for the transition and look forward to certification and working cooperatively with you once we've received our certification.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, good morning, and thank you for coming and making an excellent presentation about your new organization and how Metro will be able to work closely with you to continue to make this the safest system in the country. So thank you very much. And it's just a quick question about the TOC. That will go away. But is there an official act that must be taken by somebody, the jurisdictions, yourself, Metro, to dissolve the TOC rather than it be absorbed into you with no official act, and 20 years from now the TOC is still around and resurfaces out of nowhere?
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to try to answer the legal question, but the jurisdictions are prepared to take the action that's required to sunset the TOC. The MOU that creates the organization contains provisions for sunsetting it, and so once we're certified, I anticipate the jurisdictions will take that appropriate action.
And maybe it would be helpful that you all could inform the jurisdictions as to what, as a member of the D.C. Council, do I introduce a bill that sunsets, that ends the TOC, or what is the actual process? Because I want to make sure that all the actions are taken that are clear and concise that end that organization for good. So that would be terrific if you could let the various jurisdictions know what actions they need to take and when in order to sunset that. Okay?
Good suggestion. We'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Mr. Meyer, Mr. Hart, thank you very much. It's really good to see you. I can't tell you, how good it is to see you. It means a lot to the respective jurisdictions. One question, Mr. Meyer, on your presentation when you talked about the enforcement powers. The slide, the second bullet, says that you'll direct WMATA to prioritize spending on safety critical items, but in your oral remarks, you said reprogram spending. And to me, they're qualitatively different things. One suggests that if they're safety critical items, you will direct that WMATA figure out how to find the money to do it. The second suggests that you will actually look at approved budget items and tell WMATA not to spend on one, to spend on another. And to me, that is a different question of governance and oversight. So can you just give us a greater sense of what you think there?
And as I sit here, I can't quote the law, so I can assure you that we'll follow precisely the written words in the law. But I think your point is well taken, and reprogram was not in my script. It just sort of came out. And I don't think we are interested in seeing you defund programs. The central interest is to help you cooperatively identify safety critical items and ensure that they're adequately resourced. And
thank you so much.
I appreciate the distinction.
Sure.
I want to thank you for raising that question as well, because we're learning to dance, so we're going to have to figure these things out as we go. And and good communication is going to be central to that. So thank you. If you ever have any issues like that, please let us know, and we will address them collaboratively.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure, absolutely. Any other questions? Mr. Corcoran, you have a question.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, David and Chris. Thank you
for being here. I agree with Christian's sentiment. We're happy to have you here. A couple of things that are in here. Number one, in relation to the IG's office, and the second one in relation to what it says, triennial audits. So, you know, currently the IG is, there's a lot of questions out there. Is the IG independent? The IG reports to the board today, right? And so how will you manage that relationship? Because we do need the IG to have a sense of independence. We don't necessarily direct him and the office what to do today. He does that on his own based on agreement with his team. So how would you see that relationship working?
Well, I think you'll discover a common theme between Chairman Hart and me. We like to approach every relationship cooperatively. And so it would be my thought to begin to build a relationship with the Inspector General and learn the capabilities of the Inspector General's staff and strengths and attempt to forge a relationship that would allow the Inspector General's office, to the extent appropriate, be a little bit of a force multiplier for the comparatively smaller WMSC. I've seen that in the past in other organizations where an Inspector General's office that might be particularly interested in helping an organization discover and rectify safety deficiencies is a fabulous resource to be used to that end.
Agreed.
It would be my hope that we'd be able to create such a relationship here.
Okay. I would also note that to the extent the enabling language lacks specificity, we would have to learn as we go and see what needs to be fixed, and there'd be some personalities. I mean, it's going to be a case-by-case determination on just how that relationship will work, but it would start with seeing how specific the enabling language is and what it specifies and make sure we satisfy that.
Okay. And while I'm no longer involved in the audit itself, obviously we do an annual audit with contract with RSM out there today, which is very detailed. Will you do a completely separate, and is it a financial audit that we're referring to in the triennial audit there?
The triennial audit is a safety assessment. It's the point of the triennial audit is to ensure that WMATA is carrying out its safety plans and programs efficiently and effectively as those plans are written. So it's not a financial audit per
okay.
se. I think there's a little bit of confusion too in calling it a triennial audit. So yes, there will be a big report that's published every 3 years, but what you'll actually see us doing once our program is certified is conducting ongoing audit programs that are components of the triennial audit that will result each one in a report in and of itself, and then a bigger report as a compendium of that work every 3 years.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, Mr. McMillan?
Hi. Under enforcement powers, there's reference to directing WMATA to suspend or disqualify an individual, et cetera, et cetera. Are there situations that you're aware of or could foresee where there's an interaction between that authority and some of our responsibilities in our collective bargaining agreements?
Yes, and I think that's why that power is phrased very carefully in our enabling legislation. And I tried to speak carefully when I said it, because if there came about a time when we actually had to use that authority, the WMSC would direct WMATA to suspend or remove an individual. And in so doing, WMATA would need to follow its procedures for taking such an action like that. So we wouldn't be directly performing employer labor relations for you. We'd be directing you to take that action or the appropriate management of WMATA to take that action.
But you don't read that as overriding any of the procedures and obligations we would have absent a direction from the MSC?
To be perfectly honest, I think that might be a legal question for our two lawyers to sort out, and I think that's a good homework assignment for us to do.
Okay, I'm speaking in very hypothetical terms here, so just...
Very good. Thank you.
This entire relationship is new, so there are going to be a number of questions like that will have to be determined with experience, because there's no other operation in the country that is like this one with the three jurisdictions, et cetera, et cetera.
Gentlemen, I just want to endorse what my colleagues have said and welcome you, and I hope I'll be able to welcome you back on April 15th of next year. I can recall somewhat like Dean Acheson being present at the creation and remembering a call in October 2015. I am. A call in 2015 from the then FTA administrator, calling to advise me, as in my role at that point of chair of the safety committee, that she was having the FTA taking over safety responsibility for WMATA, which she said would be just for a temporary period. And that temporary period will, of course, last 3 years, and it'll be 3.5 years before that temporary period ends. So it's very important to get you to that finish line. In that connection, your last chart, which is how the current status and next steps, so it sets out, I guess, a couple of bullet points, what's going to happen in these next steps. And as you know, if you don't get to that finish line at April 15th, there's a great financial penalty that's imposed on the various jurisdictions in terms of FTA grants. So it'd be helpful to get your assessment of what time period we're looking for, when these various things would happen, so that we can sort of monitor you from afar and keep track that you're on schedule, and we'll get to the finish line on April 15th. So if you could just put some rough time frames on some of these events, I think that would be appreciated.
I'll try to do that. I mean, as I said, there's, other than the statutory deadline, there's not a set time period for transition. And what Chairman Hart said is also true here. The FTA hasn't managed a transition like this before. And as a new organization, obviously, we haven't been through that before. I can tell you that as we sit here today, we are the best prepared that we could possibly be to move through this transition. We have, as a condition of submitting our application, we had to be adequately resourced to work our oversight program, and we have hired a slate of subject matter experts and other staff who are fully capable and prepared to step up and move through transition. We expect to try to put a little time frame on it. We expect that now that we have turned our application in to the FTA, we know that they are working diligently to make a completeness determination. We look forward to receiving that completeness determination in the next 2 to 3 weeks, perhaps. After that completeness determination has been made, then we look forward to a transition kickoff meeting where the FTA, the WMSC, and WMATA will come to the table and commit the resources that are going to be necessary to actually work this transition. By the end of October, I suspect, we will be in full swing in doing the knowledge transfer. That's the technical sessions, the second to last bullet. What that will look like is experts in the various subject matter areas coming together for hours at a time to review the materials that the FTA has assembled during its federal oversight of WMATA, as well as to learn from WMATA itself, from its lessons learned, having enjoyed this federal oversight for more than 3 years. Then we'll move in toward the latter part of the year into the shadowing process. There are two phases to the shadowing process. It's not complicated. Our staff will begin to shadow the feds as they perform their oversight duties here at WMATA Metro Rail. And as we become increasingly capable, we'll take off the training wheels and we'll start to do the oversight, and the FTA will shadow us for the purpose of validating that we have the capability to work our oversight plan. Eventually, this will culminate in certification. That will happen before the deadline, and it's my hope that it'll happen well before the deadline probably while the weather's still cold in 2019. But we're going to have to actually get boots on the ground to be able to fine-tune that schedule any further.
But to summarize, I take it what you're saying is that you expect the shadowing process to begin before the end of the year, and that shadowing process to be concluded, as you say, sometime while it's still cold, which I would interpret even in these times of climate change to be sometime in late February, early March of 2019.
That would be my hope. We're going to have to really engage in this. You know, we haven't done this before. Either have they. I think we have confidence in each other that we're capable of this. But it's going to be the necessity will be to make the suit of clothes and make it fit.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
By way of an overview, I'd like to add to that that FTA has been very, very helpful to us from the beginning in helping us get our application in time and working with us to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And believe me, they want to get rid of this as much as we want it. So I think there's going to be a collaborative push to make this happen, and I won't be surprised if it happens early. But kudos to the FTA for all the help they've given us through this process.
I think we all want this temporary oversight to end
right.
April 15th of next
right.
year. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, please.
David or Chris, the organizational chart with the green and purple colors, when we last heard from FTA, we had heard that most of those positions had been filled. Are they all filled, whether by individual employees or by contractors, or is that still the plan at this point?
Not everybody has come aboard, but all of the green positions minus one have been filled. We have one current recruiting that's still going on. It's for one of the program specialist positions. We may redesign that slightly now that we have the other resources on board. But given the hiring that we've done and the two contracts that have been awarded on our behalf, we're well-resourced and prepared to move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
The plan on that was if we know that we're going to need at least one full-time employee for a spot, then we will hire that person. If we don't see the need at this point for one FTE, then that's where we will have the contract to provide resources as needed to do those less than full FTE positions at the outset. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions, comments from the board? Okay.
So before you adjourn the meeting, you can just ask Jack.
Yes, if we have chairman.
Okay, thank you. And again, thank you very much for your presentation. In accordance with the bylaws, I, Jack Evans, request that the Board of Directors convene an executive session to discuss the following matters pursuant to Article 2, Paragraph 9, Subsections E, Safety and Security Matters when premature release would compromise public safety, Subsection B, Litigation, Investigations, and other legal matters requiring the provisions of legal advice of consultation with counsel and staff members, and Item C, Personnel Matters. So I'd like to move approval of this request at this time. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, we'll convene to upstairs.
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.